Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Ches. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara that we will be opening up with is found at the very bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara features Rabbi Nechemya Omer, a quote from the Mishnah, that involved the number of people needed in a city, according to him, before we can establish a Sanhedrin of 23 in that town. So Rabbi Chanya says, you need 230 people, keneged sorei asoros, meaning that every member of Sanhedrin would be a person, the 23 that is, each one of them, a person in charge of 10 people. So 23 times 10 gives you a community of 230 people. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Mosayim Veshivim Veshiva. At this point we see a section in a frame in our marking system. The framed sources are Tanaic sources, whether they be Mishnayos or Brises or anything thereof. We see another opinion that we did not see in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah we saw the number 120 of the Tanakhama. We saw Rabbi Nechemya 230. Rabbi says 277 people must be in the community before we can appoint a Sanhedrin for that town. The Gemara asks, V'hotanya Rabbi Omer Mosayim V'shivim Ushmoida. There's another source featuring Rabbi himself that's saying you need 278. Lo kashya, no problem. Ha Rebbe Yehuda, ha Rabbanan. Let us see how Rashi explains this at the top of the page. Mosayim v'shivim v'shiva, Mosayim u'shloshim, the basic 230, Karebi Nechemya. V'oid mem zayin, another 47, she'im yishalku beisdin, if there is a split decision in the beisdin. 11 Yud Aleph, 11 Mizakin, the Echadasor Mechaivin, and 11 finding guilty. Once again, 11 finding innocent and 11 finding guilty. The Echad Omer Eini Yodeh, and one of them says, I don't know. Yosifu Me'elu Mem Zayin, we will add from these 47 people that Rebbe said must be there. Additional, in addition to the 230, we'll draw from them ad shivim kiramrinun behoyubodkim, as is said in that perek hoyubodkim shemosifin shnayim al ha esrim shlosha. We add 2 to the 23. Im yizkuhu shnehem hare yudgimol mizakin v'chadasor mechayvin. If the 2 that we just added find him innocent, so you'll have 13 saying innocent and the original 11 saying guilty. And the result of that will be zakai, v'im yechayvuhu chayov. And if the 2 that we just added find him to be guilty, he'll join up with the 11 originals that found him guilty, and you'll have 13 against 11, diko hatoyo l'ro'a pishayim. And that conforms with our rules that you have a majority of 2 favoring the guilty verdict, which is fine. V'im yichalku, if the 2 that we just added split again, one this way and one that way, tzorach oid lehoisiv shnayim, we'll have to add another 2. V'chein le'olam, and we'll continue this process again and again, ad shiyu shiv'im l'Rabbi Yehuda, until there's a total of 70 in the court, as per Rabbi Yehuda. V'shivim ve'echod, and 71 l'Rabbanan. And that difference of 1 is the difference in the 2 numbers that we just had, whereby we're going to add either 47 to the 23 for a total of 70, or we're going to add 48 to the 23, accounting for a total of 71, as per Shitas HaRabbanan. Tanu Rabbanan, continuing in the Gemara, third line from the top on Yud Ches Amud Aleph, we have a Tanaic source. This Tanaic source features a pasuk in Parshas Yisro. The topic we see on the side of the Gemara is Cheshbon, Mispar, Sori, Alofim, Sori, Meos, V'chulei. The number of judges or people in charge of the Sorim, literally ministers, those that are in charge of those under them, and they're entitled by the number of people they are in charge of. In other words, a man in charge of 1,000 people is called a Sar Elef. A person in charge of 100 is called Sar Me'ah. And the total number of judges, Shehoyu La'am Yisrael Bamidbar, that the total number of these people in charge is accounted for over here. Let us now continue with the source, and it opens with a pasuk. V'samto aleim, you shall place upon them sorei alofim, sorei meos, sorei chamishim, v'sorei asoros. We know in round figures the number of Jews that were counted in the Midbar, males over the age of 20, amounted to 600,000. So the numbers of judges or of sarim, of people in charge, will reflect that number as follows. Sorei alofim, how many sorei alofim were there? Each one of these is in charge of 1,000 people. So there were sheishmeo, 600 of them. 600 people, each one in charge of 1,000, gives you a total of 600,000 people. Sorei meos, people in charge of 100, how many of those individuals were there? Sheshes alofim. There were 6,000 of them. Sorei chamishim, how many of those were there? People in charge of 50? There were shneim asar elef, 12,000 of them. Naturally, if you do 50 times 12,000, you come out to 600,000. Sorei asoros, people in charge of 10 individuals, sheshes ribo, there were 60,000 of them. 60,000 times 10, once again, is 600,000. Nimtzu Dayone Yisrael, the number of judges, if you add up all of these numbers, and we've tried to make it easier by writing in the numbers, you will find out the total number is Shivas Riboi, 7 times 10,000, that's 70,000, Shmoines Alofim, another 8,000, Vashesh Meos, 600, a total of 78,600 people of Dayonis, Dayon status. With that, we complete the first perek of Sanhedrin with the hope of going over it, as the bold-faced words indicate, Hadron Alech Dine Momenus. We start the second perek, and we open up with a diamond. The diamond marking is here to highlight the Kohen Gadol, and later in the Mishnah, Melech, whereby you see we have here in this, in our title, we have featured the Noseh and Mivneh. The Kohen is a reference to the Kohen Gadol, of course, as is featured in the diamond. These are halachas. The Mishnah will feature halachas that are relevant to a Kohen Gadol and to a Melech. In the previous perek, the Mishnah had mentioned that a Kohen Gadol is judged by a court of 71. Hence, the Mishnah here picks up on that which was mentioned in the previous perek with more halachas concerning a Kohen Gadol and also a Melech. The perek begins, Kohen Gadol, Don V'Donim Oso. He's able to serve as a judge and be judged. Me'id U Me'idin Oso. He's able to serve as a witness and others can offer testimony concerning him. Choletz V'Choltzin Lishto. He can participate in the ceremony of chalitza, whereby if his brother died leaving no children, so the almona of his brother would remove his shoe, and in the event he dies leaving no children, so his wife will, his almona then will remove the shoe of his surviving brother. Umiyabnin es ishto, in the event that the Kohen Gadol dies leaving no children, so his brother will do yibum, marry the almona. Avalhu eino miyabim, but he, the Kohen Gadol, in the event that his brother died leaving no children, will not marry his brother's widow in the yibum context. Mitnei shu wasir b'almona, because a Kohen Gadol, as opposed to a standard Kohen, a Kohen Hedyot, a Kohen Gadol is forbidden from taking an almona, from marrying an almona. Meis lo meis, if a close relative of his dies, eino yoytze achar hamita, he doesn't follow the casket or the body directly. Elo hein nichsin vehu nigle. Once the people carrying the nifter, the deceased, they turn the corner around into a certain particular street, they are no longer visible. They're, as the Mishnah says, nichsin, they're covered up, they're no longer visible. Then the hu nigle, then he, the Kohen Gadol, can make his appearance following the entourage, but not together with them. Hain niglin, at a point that they are visible, that a place that they are located, the hu nichse, he should not be with them, he should be covered. In other words, that he should always make sure that they're turning the corner onto another street before he moves further in that direction. The Yoytze Imon Ad Pesach Shar Ha'ir, and he, the Kohen Gadol, will follow them till the entrance to the town. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Yoytze Min HaMikdash. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Kohen Gadol does not leave the Beis HaMikdash whatsoever for funeral purposes. Mishum Shinemar, Umin HaMikdash Lo Yoytze. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Pasuk is taken literally. He shall not leave the physical Beis HaMikdash. According to Rabbi Meir, the understanding of the Pasuk was, Umin HaMikdash Lo Yoytze, he should not leave his sanctity. Namely, he should stay away from coming near to tuma, to coming to near to defilement. But according to Rabbi Meir, the pasuk is not taken literally that he should not leave the Beis HaMikdash. He's able to leave, but he must make sure he maintains his distance, as we describe. We've also featured with a double underline with dots in it 2 points regarding consoling in the case of death. Ukshu menachim achirim, when he consoles others after the burial, the mourners line up and the public walks by them offering their words of condolence. So when the Kohen Gadol approaches the line of relatives that are in mourning, the Mishnah goes on to say, Kol ha'om oimrim loy onu kaporascha. Let's go over this to correct the mistake in the reading. Ukshu menachim achirim derech kol ha'om oimrim boze achar ze. The population walks one following the other past the mourners. What about when the Kohen Gadol approaches the mourners? The hamemune mematzoi beino levein ha'om. The Kohen Gadol, when he approaches the mourners, he does so in such a way that he is sandwiched in, so to speak, to his on his right, the Memune, this is the assistant or the vice Kohen Gadol, stands in such a way that he, the Kohen Gadol, is positioned between this Memune, who is standing to his right, and the rest of the people to his left. And the Kohen Gadol is then in the middle. And in that way, he walks by the mourners. Ukshu misnachei me'achirim, when the Kohen Gadol himself is in a state of mourning and is receiving consolation from the public, Kol ha'om oimrim lo, the public says to him, Anu kaparascha. They declare that we are to be an atonement for you. The Rashi explains, Anu kaparascha, Bonu, through us, tiskapir ato, achieve your atonement through us. V'anachnu tachtecha l'chol roi lovo alecha, that whatever evil or bad should befall you should come upon us. V'hu omer lehen, tisborchu min hashamayim, and the Kohen Gadol responds to them with that bracha, be blessed from heaven. Ukshemavrin oisoi, and when the special meal that is served, the first meal after the burial is served to the mourner, is called Sudas Havora. So that when they serve this meal, Kol ha'om mesuben al ha'aretz, v'hu mesav al hasafsal, the people that are eating with him sit on the ground, and he sits on a bench, on a higher level. Rashi adds, points out, v'hu mesav b'chavod. We dashed underline that word in the Rashi. He sits in honor. Let's not forget, we're talking about a man occupying a very, very high office. Continuing in the Mishnah, we now turn to the king. And you'll notice the contrast here. Hamelech loy don velo donen oisai. Loy meid velo meiden oisai. Lo choylets velo choltsin leishtoi. Lo miyabem velo miyabmin leishto. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im rotza lachloitz oy liyabim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if the king should want to participate in the chalitza ceremony or to marry the almona of his brother, zochur latoiv, then he's remembered for the good. Omru lo, ein shomen lo. The chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and say, if he wants to do it, we don't allow him. The ein noisin almanoso. The king who dies, his widow is not to be married. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, noisei hamelech almanoso shemelech. A king who died, leaving a widow, this widow can be married by a succeeding king. Shekein motzinu b'David shenos almanoso shel Shaul. We found that David, who succeeded Shaul, married the widow of left by Shaul. Shenemar, V'etno l'cho es beis adonecho v'es neshei adonecho b'cheikecho. The Gemara now turns to the beginning of the Mishnah and asks, why does the Mishnah teach that a Kohen Gadol can serve as a judge? Kohen Gadol don, pshita, that seems to be obvious. So the Gemara says, donin oisoi itzdrichale. True, the opening of the Mishnah has no chidush in it, but it was said as a lead-in to the second point, namely, that he can be judged. The Rashi says, Donino so it's drichale, salka daito chamino, I would have thought without this Mishnah, lo lezalzel lemesi kami beidina, that let us not embarrass him by having him come in front of a court. So the Mishnah tells us that even so, he's in a position that he can be judged. The Gemara asked, "Ha nami pshita, iloi daininon lei, ihu hechi dain." The Hoksiv his koshishu v'koshu, the Omar Reish Lakish kshoit atzmacha v'achakach kshoit achirim. The Gemara says that once you work with the assumption that the Kohen Gadol can serve as a judge, that's a matter of simplicity. That's poshut. That's obvious. Then the second point in the Mishnah is also obvious. Because if it were such that he could not be judged, then how in the world could he judge others? The Pasuk says, he's koshishu v'koshu. And Reish Lakish explains that as follows, that you have to decorate yourself before you can decorate others. In other words, if someone is going to serve as a judge of others, he must be someone that can himself be judged. Therefore, the question remains, why does the Mishnah open up telling me the obvious, that a Kohen Gadol can judge? Elo, Aidi de Kaboi Lemisni, since the Mishnah had to get to the point of Melech lo don velo don and also, the second part of the Mishnah which featured the king, that he cannot judge, and he is not judged by others, Tananami to Kohen Gadol Don Vidonin. The Mishnah opened with the contrast case involving the Kohen Gadol, that he can judge others and be judged. The Iboy Esema, another approach to understanding the opening of the Mishnah. What was the Mishnah trying to accomplish when it says Don Vidonin Oso? Hokamashmon. The Mishnah was making reference to that which is taught in the following Tanaic source, Kiddushanya. Kohen Gadol Shehorag Es HaNefesh B'Mezid. A Kohen Gadol that committed premeditated murder, Neherag, he is subject to the death penalty. B'Shogeg Goyle, if he committed murder in an accidental way, so then Goyle, he goes into exile, which means he goes to one of the cities of refuge, the Orei Miklat. The Over al Aseh, the Aloy Saseh, these expressions will be dealt with by the Gemara later on. Varehu Kehedyot Lechol Dvorov. And he's considered a commoner with regard to all other matters. That too is an expression that the Gemara will have to deal with later. Now the Gemara turns to this particular source and raises some questions. B'mezid Neherag, which was a quote from this source, if he kills in a premeditated fashion, he, the Kohen Gadol, is himself subject to the death penalty. Pshita, that seems to be obvious. Why does the source teach that? More answers. B'shogeg goyle itzdiri cholei. It was necessary as a lead-in to the second halacha, that if he kills in an inadvertent fashion, he is subject to be exiled to one of the cities of refuge. The Gemara asks, Honami Pshita, that too seems to be an obvious point. After all, that's the halacha, that if a person commits a murder, but he does so inadvertently, in order to protect himself, he runs off to one of the cities of refuge. He protects himself thereby from the Goyel Hadom. What is the significance of having to teach that? So the Gemara answers, Itzrich, it's important that this point be taught. And as we go on in the Gemara, we will notice the beginning of a long answer, the Tuf, that appears to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, that's encircled with a vertical line, and this lasts till the third line from the top of Amud Beis. We'll explain why it's necessary to be taught. The Gemara continues, Itzrich, Salka Daito Chamina, I would have thought, without this, Hoyul Uksiv, since the Pasuk says, V'yoshav bo ad mois ha-kohen ha-gadol, that in general, someone who is sent to a city of refuge is sentenced or condemned to staying there until the death of the presiding Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol that was in office at the time that he was sentenced to go into exile. So, I would have thought, Emo, I would have thought to say the following rule, called the Isle Takanto Bechazora Ligli. Any individual who has the hope of one day exiting the Ir Miklat, so he initially goes to an Ir Miklat. However, the Lesle Takanto Bechazora, notice how we've dashed underlined two expressions to serve to highlight the contrast. There's the Islay Takana, one who has hope of exit, and the Leslay, one who has no hope of exit. The Leslay Takanto Bechazor Alolikli. I would have thought that he who never can leave doesn't go initially to an Ir Miklat. We'll skip the bracketed section momentarily. This takes us to the third line from the top of Amud Beis. Kamash Malan, the source informs us that even though we're dealing with someone, in this case the Kohen Gadol, who doesn't exit the Ir Miklat ever, namely the Kohen Gadol who committed murder in an inadvertent fashion, never leaves the Ir Miklat, therefore it's necessary to tell that even so, he does go into exile in the event that he commits such a murder. Let's go over the section we skipped. The brackets are for skipping purposes, as we just did, in order to make the reading flow nicely. We've indicated with our note on the inside margin at the beginning of the brackets, Sograyim l'shem dilug l'hokel ala kriya, therefore the purpose of skipping, to make the reading easier. Betocha sograyim muvo hareka shel ha'avamina. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will feature the background information that enabled us to develop this havamina, this initial thought that the Gemara and the source comes to reject. So what was our initial thought? That only those that have hope of exit go, that enter initially. However, those that have no hope of exit from the city of refuge, maybe they don't go into exile. And the Kohen Gadol who commits a murder is in fact one of those people that has no hope of ever exiting. Disnan, as the Mishnah teaches, and we have this featured in a frame, Hahorig Kohen Gadol or Kohen Gadol Shahorag, one who kills a Kohen Gadol or a Kohen Gadol that commits a murder, O Kohen Gadol Shahorag Esanefesh, Eino Yotze Misham Li'olam. He doesn't leave the Ir Miklot ever. Amo lo ligli. So I would have thought that since he doesn't ever leave it, he doesn't go there in the first place. Komash Malon, that's what the source tells me, that he does go there. Before we go further, let's glance at Rashi at the top. Hahorig Kohen Gadol Bishogeg. One who kills a Kohen Gadol inadvertently, he goes into exile to the city of refuge and never leaves. The reason for this is because since at the time that he goes into exile, there is no Kohen Gadol. He just killed the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, at the time that he goes into exile, there is no presiding Kohen Gadol. But misas mi yashuv. Upon the death of whom, of which Kohen Gadol is he going to exit? The rule says that upon the death of the Kohen Gadol that was presiding at the time the murderer went into exile, then the murderer leaves. But in this case, there was no Kohen Gadol presiding at the time that he committed the murder, because he murdered the Kohen Gadol. And likewise, our case, the Kohen Gadol that himself commits murder inadvertently, the misas mi yashuv, upon whose death will he be able to leave? Hal leko Kohen Gadol, there is no other Kohen Gadol. He is the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara continues by saying, v'ema hochinami, maybe let us follow our havamina, our suggestion that maybe he should not go into exile in the first place. Maybe, as we said in the Havamina, that only those who have hope of exiting go into exile in the first place. Therefore, Omar Kral, the Pasuk says, Lonus Shama Kol Rotseach. That Pasuk is in the context of exile for inadvertent murderers. And it says, they shall run there. Who runs there? All murderers. Afilu Kohen Gadol B'mashma. The Pasuk itself seems to include even the Kohen Gadol as well. We have now a quote from the source we saw on Amud Aleph. In order to be able to find this more easily, we've provided arrows here, an arrow indicating Amud Aleph. So you turn back to Amud Aleph, find a corresponding arrow that indicates Amud Beis, and you will find that four lines from the bottom. In the source that we said was needed explanation, it said in the source that he shall violate an asay, positive commandments, and negative commands, and los asay. The Gemara now, on Omid Beis, over al asay v'al los asay. The Gemara asks, lo sagi delo ovar. Is it such that he has to violate this? In other words, by the simple reading of the source, it says he shall violate positive commands and negative commands. Therefore, the Gemara provides a rereading of the source. Hochi ka'omar. Im ovar al aseh ve'al lo isaseh, harehu kehedyo l'chol dvarov. In the event that he violates a positive command or violates a negative command, in the event that someone violates a negative command, he is subject to a penalty of malchus, of lashes. Harehu kehedyo l'chol dvarov. He is viewed, he is dealt with as a commoner to be judged by a court of three. Pshita, the Gemara asks, that seems to be obvious. The Gemara answers, it's not so obvious. I would have thought something else. In order to answer this, the Gemara presents what I would have thought, this being the answer to the question of Pshita. It's a long answer, and you can see from the long answer marking, the tough teretz, that's in the top encircled right next to the Gemara, to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this answer. What would have I thought? The Gemara continues, since we have a Tanaic source that says as follows, Ein donin loy es hashevet velo es novi hasheker velo es kohen gadol elo alpi beis din shel shivim ve'echad. The Mishnah said that all of these people, including the Kohen Gadol, who is the subject of our discussion now, they are judged only by the court of 71, only by the high court. The Omar of Ado Bar Avo, Kol Hadover Hagadol Yoviu Elecha. Rav Ado gave as a basis for this teaching in the Mishnah this particular pasuk. And how do we darshan the pasuk? Dvarav shel gadol, matters of the great man. The great people include the Kohen Gadol, or the Novi, or a tribe. So I might have thought, Emo, that I would have thought that the understanding of this drasha is as follows. Kol Dvarav Shel Gadol. When we explain the pasuk to mean Dvarav Shel Gadol, maybe it means all the matters of the Gadol are judged by the Sanhedrin HaGadol, are judged by the top court. Komash Malon, that's what this Tanaic source says, that not so. In other words, that he's considered like a hedyot, like a commoner, with regard to the violations of other matters like an aseh or a los aseh, and in those cases he's judged by a court of three. The Gemara asks, v'ema hachinami, maybe in fact all of the matters of the Kohen Gadol, including minor matters of this great man, are judged by the top court. So the Gemara says, no, miksiv divrei gadol. Does the pasuk say all the matters of the gadol of the great man? It doesn't say that. Rather, hadavar hagadol ksiv, which means davar gadol mamish, meaning only serious matters, various violations that have attached to them a death penalty, only those matters of a odom gadol, of a great man, those, and only those things, are judged by the court of 71. But for minor offenses of a great man, those are judged by a court of three. Me'id u'me'idin oisoi. The Gemara asks, Me'id? Is that so, that he offers testimony? V'ha Tanya. We have the following source, and the topic that we'll be dealing with here is, can be entitled Kovet HaBrios, whereby there are certain instances where the halacha takes into consideration the embarrassment or disparagement of an individual, and because of that consideration, certain types of halachas are relaxed if it's going to involve someone's disparagement. And the classic case of that is in the realm of Hashavas Aveda, of returning a lost article. If the return of the lost article, which itself is a mitzvah, but it involves confronting other problems, and we will see some of those problems, one of those problems being an affront to one's honor, then the Torah offers an opening, an allowance for him to not perform the mitzvah. So in light of that, do we not have a similar situation here, that even though it may be considered a mitzvah to offer testimony, however, for a Kohen Gadol to appear as a witness in court, there is an element of disparagement or of decrease of dignity that is involved. So why do we allow for that? Therefore, with that in mind, we continue in the Gemara. Me'id, is it so that the Kohen Gadol is able to offer testimony and appear in court? V'ha Tanya, v'ha isalamta. The pasuk in the context of restoring lost items, it says v'hisalamta. Now, literally, without citing this word in its context, but taking the word on its own, and that's how Chazal take it in this particular drasha, it means, and you shall avoid. Literally, you shall hide from it, but it means you shall avoid it. And we learn from here, sometimes you're allowed to avoid involving yourself with returning the lost item, and sometimes you're not. What are examples of times that you are allowed to avoid involving yourself with it? So we list off three examples. Aleph, koyin v'hu b'veis hakvoros. If the lost article is in a cemetery, and the one who notices the lost item happens to be a koyin, he doesn't go and pursue the lost item because that would involve his becoming tamei, and a koyin is not allowed to defile himself. Zokein v'eino l'fi chvodo. This would be the topic that's most germane to our discussion, a sage, and it's beneath his dignity to walk around town with a lost ox, and hence the pasuk allows this zaken to avoid getting involved with dragging the lost ox and trying to restore it to its owner. A third situation that the Torah makes an allowance for, oy shehoisa melacha sheloi merubo mishal chavero, which means that the loss of time involved for this particular individual in involving himself with restoring the lost article, the loss of time and income from his involvement would be worth more than the article itself. He does not have to get involved. L'kach ne'emar v'salamta. And as a result of this, the Torah provides this allowance of allowing you to avoid getting involved. Therefore, we see that when matters of kavanah brios arise, the posuk that says, thou shall not hide yourself from restoring lost articles is relaxed. So too over here, in our case, it's a zilzul for the Kohen Gadol to appear as a witness in Beis Din. The Gemara answers, Omar of Yosef, Meid Lamelech. The Gemara attempts to say that when the Mishnah said he serves as a witness, it means he serves as a witness for a king. So in that context, it wouldn't be considered a degradation of his honor. The Gemara asks, but what do you mean, saying witness for a king? But our Mishnah teaches, lo don, regarding a king. It says, lo don, v'lo donenoso, lo me'id, v'lo me'idenoso. That a king doesn't get involved with the whole judicial procedure. He doesn't serve as a judge. And finally, and we've dashed, underlined what's important for us, lo me'idenoso, others don't say testimony concerning him, concerning the king. So how can you suggest that the case of the Kohen Gadol made is he's made for a king? Elo Omar Rabbi Zeira, Me'id leben melech. The king serves testimony for the son of a king. In other words, the Kohen Gadol serves as a witness and offers testimony for the son of a king. And that supposedly would be still within the realm of the bounds of his honor. The Gemara asks, that's not so. Ben Melech Hedyodhu, the son of a king, is a commoner. And being that is the case, how is it that the Kohen Gadol can serve as witness for the son of a king? Elo, Meid Bifnei HaMelech. The Gemara answers that the Kohen Gadol will serve as a witness when the king is present and sitting in the Sanhedrin. The Gemara asks, but v'ha'ein moshivin melech b'Sanhedrin. But we know that we don't place a king as a member of the court. So the Gemara answers, mishum yakro de Kohen Gadol osav Yosef, because of the honor of the Kohen Gadol, the king will come and sit there in the presence of the court, mekabli liani nihali l'saduse, while the king is sitting there, we will accept the testimony of the Kohen Gadol. Koihu, the Kohen, the Melech then gets up, the ozil, and leaves. Umaynino le anan bedine, and then we look into the case. We left out a technical point, but the idea of the king coming and sitting while the Kohen Gadol offers testimony, this was a case of offering testimony for the son of the king. In other words, the Gemara's answer before is not totally dispelled. It's maintained that we're talking about a Kohen Gadol offering testimony for the king's son, whereby the Gemara thought before, but the king's son is a mere commoner, it's in the situation that the father of this individual, namely the king himself, is sitting there while the Kohen Gadol is offering testimony, we are thereby preserving the honor and dignity of the Kohen Gadol. Gufa. This is a quote from what was mentioned, by the way, just above. Ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin V'lo Melech V'Kohen Gadol B'Ibor Shana. This source teaches two points, that we don't have a king as a member of Sanhedrin, and we don't have a king nor a Kohen Gadol participating in issues concerning Ibor Shana, the extension of a year. Melech B'Sanhedrin, we now explain both of these points. Why is it that a king does not sit as part of the top court? Dichtiv loisane al riv. The pasuk says that, and the drosha on that is loisane al rav. To understand that, we'll turn immediately to Rashi. Loisane al rav, eincho rashoi listor es divrei muflo shebedayonim. And once the top judge says his opinion, the other judges are not allowed to contradict what he says. The E. Omar Melech Choiva, if you have a situation that the king is sitting as a member of the top court and the king were to say something and he says something condemnatory, then Sulo Motzi Enoch Lemechsi Le Zechusa, that will lock out the others from trying to say opinions serving to defensive opinions or words of merit for the defendant, so as to preempt a situation where the zchus seekers will not be muzzled up. We say that a king doesn't sit there in the first place. Lo melech v'kohen gadol b'ibor shana. This was the second point that was mentioned in this source, that a king nor a kohen gadol participate in the decisions involving extending a year. The Gemara explains why that is so. In general terms, they're rendered unfit for this issue because of vested interest that they would have. Melech mishum afsanya. Let's turn to the Rashi for this as well. Mishum afsanya. Mechalek mamon lechaylosav. This has to do with the royal budget that he pays out to his army, to his soldiers. Kach vekach lishona. They get paid an annual wage. The wage is based on the passage of a year. Venoyach loi shiyu kol hashonim meuboros. The king has a vested interest in having more months in each year, namely leap years, thereby getting more for his money, getting 13 months of service for the amount that he has to pay, which is an annual rate. Kohen Gadol Mishum Tzina. This too, Rashi explains, Kohen Gadol Eino Yroitze. This is actually as opposed to the Melech. We saw that the Melech, the king, was very interested in having extended years, having Ibur Shonas. The Kohen Gadol is the opposite. He has a vested interest in seeing that it's not extended. Why is that? Eino Yroitze Shetis Abir Shona. He does not want the year to be extended. Mipnei Hatsino, because of the cold. What is that? The Kohen Gadol, during the Yom Kippur ceremony, which takes place, of course, in the month of Tishrei, he exposes himself to water several times during the day, 5 immersions and 10 hand and feet washings. Those are the Kiddushin. The im tisaber shana, and if the year is extended, what happens? What happens is that all of the lunar months are pushed ahead in time, while the solar calendar, the solar season, the seasons remain the same. And what happens? The im tisaber shana hare Tishrei, the month of Tishrei will be delayed, will be bimar cheshvan, will come out when, if it wouldn't have been extended, it would have been the month of Mar Cheshvan. V'tzinas mar cheshvan, the cold of cheshvan, which is a later month, meaning it's further into the cold season. So the cold of mar cheshvan, in the event that the year is extended, tiyah b'tishrei, will come out now in Tishrei, which was made later. And the Kohen Gadol doesn't want to have to encounter the cold after immersing himself five times in the course of the day. Omar Rav Papa, based on what we just learned, Rav Papa observes, Shma Mina, we can conclude, Kohen Gadol, Shma Mina, Shasa Bosar Yarcha Oziel. Literally, it means a year follows its months. That would seem to be quite obvious. What does that mean, that a year goes according to its months? Rashi explains, and this too we will take a look at, from the fact that we just said that a Kohen Gadol does not participate in Ibur Shana because of what will happen, namely the cold of Mar Cheshvan will come out in Tishrei. In other words, the year will then be, we'll call it unsynchronized, whereby the solar phenomenon, the seasonal phenomenon, will not be in sync with the lunar months. Rashi explains here, Shasa Basar Yarcha Asla, Achar Yerochim months, Horeuyim Lios, Holeich, I'm skipping the bracketed words for a moment, the months and the year correspond with Horeuyim Lios, Holeich Kor V'choim Shoshana, the cold and heat of a year come out during the months you would expect them to come out. And that is so if the year is not altered, it's not extended. Let's read that again. Shosa Bosar Yarchi Azla. Achar Yerochim Horeuyim Lios Im Lo Nisabra Holech Kor V'chom Shoshana V'tzina Horeuyim Bar Mecheshvan. In the event that the year is extended, the cold that would have come out in Cheshvan, Havya B'Tishrei Ke She Misaberes, will now come out in Tishrei in the event that the year is extended, meaning the lunar month of Tishrei is pushed forward deeper into the year, whereby it's now going to experience the cold that would have accompanied, would have been characteristic of what would have been otherwise Cheshvan. So we can say that as a result of the Ibor, the cold level you would have expected in Cheshvan is now going to come out in Tishrei. Namely, without the Ibor, the cold level would have been synchronized with the appropriate month. That leads us into a long question. We see a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this question. This question will feature a series of triangles with their tops colored in. There are three of these triangles featured, and we offer an explanation on the side of the Gemara. We have the nosei, the title of the sugya is E Shasa Basar Yarcha or Basar Ibura. Is the year considered the year? When we speak about the year, we're talking about the seasons. Are the seasons synchronized with the normal expected arrival of the months, or are the seasons synchronized with the extension of the year? Namely, that through the extension of the year, that puts things into their expected synchronization. The Mivneh, we have a structural note here to explain these colored in triangles. These are Imrois, the statements shall Gimel Roye Boker of three cowhands, cowboys, Ha Mishtaichos Le'oinas Achiref. These comments are going to be comments concerning the cold season, the winter season. Likboya im hu ador o adayin shvat. And through these comments, we'll see whether we can determine that we're holding in Adar, a later month, or we're still holding in the earlier month of Shvat. That will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara. Before we go further, let's just repeat the conclusion that Rav Popa seems to arrive at, namely, that as a result of the Ibor, things are thrown off. And the example we cited was as a result of the Ibor, the cold that one would have expected to fall out in Cheshvan is now going to come out in Tishrei, being that Tishrei was pushed forward. So Tishrei will be colder than you would have expected. The Gemara now asks, Amy, is that so? V'ho hanoch shloisha roi bokor tavu kaimi. V'shaminu rabbonan de kamri. There were three cow herds that were standing and making comments, and the rabbonan heard what they were saying. What were their comments? Chad Omar, one said, Im bochir v'lokish kechado yenats. If the early crop and the late crop are blooming at the same time. Rashi explains this a little bit more, and he says, Im yehe choim bekarka, if there's heat in the ground, v'yitzmach zera habochir v'afilo yachad, and the early planted crop and the late planted crop are sprouting together, chitin shenizru b'roisha chodesh v'asorim shenizru achshav, the wheat that was planted earlier and the barley that was planted now, if they're sprouting together because of an increased heat level in the ground, dein hu ador, that would be indicative of it being the later month of Ador. V'im lav, if they're not sprouting together, then leis dein ador elo shvat, then it's still too cold and it's still the earlier month of Shvat. That's what the Gemara says. We can read that again. Chad omar im bochir v'lokish kechada yenats. Bochir, meaning the early planted one, and the Lokish, the later one, are sprouting together. Dain hu, Dain means this is, Dain hu Ador, then this must be Ador, the month of Ador. V'im lav, less Dain Ador. If not, then it's not Ador, rather, it's still cold, it's still Shvat. V'chad Omar, another cowherd said, Im tor b'tzfar b'teleg yomus. If it's a situation that in a tor is as an ox, a shore, but tzfar in the morning, you have a situation where the morning is very cold, that it would die in the teleg, in the snow, shelig. However, on that same day, ubatihara, betoil teino yidmuch, yishlach mashre, but the noontime is so hot that the same ox will seek out the shade, tool is the shade of a teino tree, a fig tree. Yidmuch, it seeks out the shade and to sleep there. And yishlach mashre, like it means to scratch its hide because of the, like, let's assume the perspiration which causes it this sensitivity and needs to scratch itself. Dein hu ador, that's an indication that we've arrived already at the month of Adar. Once again, the morning very cold, however the noontime is quite warm. The im lav, but if it's not like that, namely the morning is cold and the noontime is also very cold, then less dein ador, then it's not Adar, it's still Shvat. The Chadomer, the third cow herd said, Im kidum tokif lachado, yehein yofach beloach, nofik lekible, dein hu ador. Rashi explains that if you have a situation where the easterly wind is blowing into your face, and you're able to exhale into the wind, and thereby push off the wind, namely that the wind isn't that strong anymore, your exhalation is able to counter the force of the oncoming wind, that's an indication, dein ador, that dein hu ador, that this must be ador. V'im lav, if that is not the case, but the easterly wind prevails, then less dein ador, it's not yet ador, it's still Shvat. And according to this situation as we're presenting it, the Rabbanan heard this, and the Rabbanan saw that it was already Adar. On the calendar, it was already Adar. but it was still very cold. And they resolved to add an Adar Beis, so that when Nisan would come out, would come around, it would experience the heat level characteristic of Nisan. In other words, we see from here that the Ibor itself creates the synchronizing of the lunar months with the expected heat level that's characteristic of those months. So, to make it simple, as a result of this question, we see that the Ibor synchronizes, whereas according to Rav Papa and his observation, the Ibor would throw things out of kilter. The Gemara, before responding to this, says this story is a little bit questionable. V'tisbara. Let's try to understand this. Rabbanan Ravasa Samuch. Do you think that the Rabbanan rely on the testimony of cowherds to come to halachic decisions? Ela Rabbanan Achush Benayu Samuch. The Rabbanan have calculations that they make. Involved, complicated, intricate calculations. The Roy Bokar is Toyuye Hu the Istaya Milsayu. The Roy Bokar just happened to chance upon the right phenomenon, and what they said just happened to agree, we'll call it Siyata Dishmaya, that what they were observing came out in agreement with the calculations that the Rabbanon made. So the bottom line, and this you'll find in Rashi, let's take a look together in the Rashi. Rabbanon Achush Benayu, some of three lines from the very bottom. Ubelav Hochi Ma'abrinon Lei. The Rabbanon, even without the observations that the Roe Boker were making, they would have extended the year anyway. Vahocha is to Yuye Mistaye Milsayu. And here it just worked out that what they said corresponded to the Rabbanon's calculations. Klomar Isrami Luhu Mazul Hashivus the Iklo Ibor Kimilsayu. It just worked out that the calculations of extending the year worked out like the cowherd said. Umihu Baroiv Ho Iburim. However, with regard to most cases of extending the year, Shasa Basar Yarcha Azla, the year would be expected to follow the months. In other words, the season would correspond to the month, and as Rav Papa observed before, the Ibor would serve to throw things all out of kilter for that particular time. Continuing in the Gemara, Choletz v'Choltzin, Avol Hu Eino Miyabim, referring to the Kohen Gadol, who said that he participates in the Chalitza ceremony, but he does not marry, in the event that his brother died leaving no children, he does not marry the widow. Kaposik v'Toni, the Mishnah teaches in an unqualified fashion the status of the widow. Lo shno min ha'erusin v'lo shno min ha'nesuin, with no distinction made between her falling to a widowhood, to becoming a widow from a state of erusin, nor or without distinguish between that and the case of falling into widowhood from a state of nisuin. Bishlamo min ha'nesuin, I understand very well that if she falls to yibum, to widowhood, and in the case she became a widow leaving no children, I understand very well that the surviving brother, who happens to be a Kohen Gadol, does not marry her, because havi aseh v'lo saaseh. The Kohen Gadol confronting an almona min ha'nesuin is confronted by two problems. One is an aseh. The aseh says that he marries only a basula, a virgin woman, and she is not that, because she, it was already entered Nisuin, lived together with her husband as man and wife do. And there's also a lo saaseh problem, namely almona lo yikach. The pasuk says regarding Kohen Gadol that he should not take, in the negative, he should not take a widow. And as far as the mitzvah of Yibum is concerned, that is a positive mitzvah. And the rule says, as the Gemara says here at the top of Yud Tes Amud Aleph, V'ein Asei Doiche Lois Asei V'Asei. And the Asei of Yibum is not strong enough to push off the negative commandment of not taking an almona and the positive commandment that a Kohen Gadol has of taking only a Besula. Elo Minho Erisin Amai. However, the case that she becomes a widow, that she falls to widowhood after having been merely an arusa, namely, her husband died, the Kohen Gadol's brother died, leaving her a widow, but before they, the couple, ever lived together, namely, they only entered Erusin. Why is it that the Kohen Gadol does not do Yibum? Yavoi Asei, let the positive command of Yibum come, V'yidche lo sase, and push off the negative commandment of Amono lo yikach. We know from other places in the Shas that that is the approach to making mitzvah decisions. That when two mitzvahs are confronting or in opposition to one another, if one is a positive mitzvah, the positive mitzvah is to be fulfilled at the expense of violating the negative. Therefore, why does the Mishnah teach in such an unqualified fashion that the Kohen Gadol never does Yibum? I can understand, as we just said, he won't do Yibum if the sister-in-law, the widow, happens to be a widow from a state of Nisuin. But if she's a widow from a state of Erisin, why is it that the Asei of Yibum doesn't push off the Lav? We should emphasize here, the reason that he's not confronting the Asei says he must take a Besula. Well, she still is a Besula because she didn't live together with her husband in the case that she becomes a widow from Erisin. So the Asei of Yibum should be able to push off the Lav of Almona lo Yikach. The Gemara answers, in principle, this should work. However, Gzeiro Bio Rishona Otu Bio Shnia. We don't want him to get involved with the first relationship with her because if he has a first relationship, he might come to have to continue living with her, and the second bia, the second relationship with her, is already no longer considered mitzvahs yibum. And at that point, we're simply left with a kohen gadol living together with an almona, and that's prohibited. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Brisa supports our analysis. Im kidmu ubalo bia rishona kanu. If the kohen gadol nevertheless did do Yibum and did the first relationship with her, it is considered an acquisition. She's considered married to him. However, v'osur l'kaimo b'bioshnia. However, it is forbidden upon him to continue living with her and to have a second relationship with her. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.